helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Ask someone to rank the freedoms protected by the Bill of Rights, and you'll probably find freedom of speech right up there near the top. Ask that same person what they're doing to defend that right, and the answer probably won't be as firm. If we claim to cherish freedom of speech, then why don't the American people do more to defend and assert it? I believe part of the reason for the lack of vigor in defending freedom of speech is the fact that most Americans don't seem to consider the speech of others worth protecting. Now, Benjamin Franklin had some interesting thoughts on the subject, so today I not only want to introduce you to some of Mr. Franklin's words, but to consider how we the people not only can defend freedom of speech, but must if we want to have it in the future. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here. You've joined us here at the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Why? Well, because as John Jay said, by knowing our rights, we'll be better prepared to defend and assert them. And today, we're talking about the First Amendment. Now, there's a lot of places we can start, but I'm going to start off with an article I wrote on the subject, starting off with some interesting words by Mr. Benjamin Franklin. In 1722, under the name Silence Dugood, Benjamin Franklin wrote, "Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech." Why is freedom of speech so important? Well, as Mr. Franklin stated, there is no such thing as public liberty without it. But what does that mean? Yes, without freedom of speech, people cannot express themselves, but there's more. Without freedom of speech, we would never be exposed to contradictory ideas, and we would never grow. The basis of the scientific method is the testing of contradictory ideas. So if freedom of speech is so important, why do people keep trying to shut it down? Well, take New York State's online hate speech law. Why is the state of New York attempting to get social media networks to act as government censors for them? There are plenty of misunderstandings around the First Amendment and the protections of freedom of speech. Have you ever taken the time to consider why this freedom is so important, and what would you do to defend it? As Benjamin Franklin said, there can be no public liberty without freedom of speech, which is why all of the recent attacks on this right seem so egregious to me. In recent years, companies like Rumble and Locals Technology have emerged to provide a venue where free speech can thrive. Now, when the state of New York decided to join the ever-growing number of governments attempting to suppress this right, these two companies filed suit against the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James. The state of New York has enacted a new law slated to take effect December 3, 2022, with one goal: to silence disfavored but constitutionally protected expression. New York General Business Law Section 394CCC ostensibly targets hateful conduct, but in reality regulates protected online speech that someone, somewhere, perceives to be vile, humiliate, or incite violence against a group or class of persons based on race, color, religion, or other protected categories. This law does not outlaw hate speech, but I believe there are other laws that do. The online hate speech law is an attempt by the state of New York to conscript online platforms to suppress disfavored expression for them. New York's online hate speech law, titled Social Media Networks Hateful Conduct Prohibited, hangs like the sword of Damocles over a broad swath of online services, such as websites and apps, threatening to drop if they do not properly address speech that expresses certain state disfavored viewpoints, as the state now mandates they must. In something of a First Amendment double whammy, the online hate speech law burdens the publication of disfavored but protected speech through unconstitutionally compelled speech, forcing online services to single out hate speech with a dedicated policy, a mandatory report and response mechanism, and obligatory direct replies to each report. If a service refuses, the law threatens New York Attorney General investigations, subpoenas, and daily fines of $1,000 per violation. Now, most people detest certain ideas, but does that give them the right to prevent others from speaking? And just who decides what is hate speech? What is hateful and dangerous to you may be quite acceptable to others. Do the people of New York really believe, after the last few years of COVID censorship, that the state will not use this law to their own political advantage? There can be no reasonable doubt New York will enforce the online hate speech law to strong-arm online services into censoring protected speech. The Attorney General's intention, in fact, could not be clearer, as recited, for example, in an October press release. The Attorney General declared that, quote, online platforms should be held accountable for allowing hateful and dangerous content to spread on their platforms, close quote, because an alleged lack of oversight, transparency, and accountability of these platforms allows hateful and extremist views to proliferate online. In the Attorney General's own words, she expects online platforms to be held accountable not only for allowing speech she finds hateful, but for the spreading of information she finds dangerous. Can you think of a better example of the suppression of freedom of speech, press, and even thought? As I've pointed out repeatedly on this program, that amendment only protects you from federal abridgment of your free speech rights. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the press. On the other hand, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the State of New York is quite specific. Every citizen may freely speak, write, and publish his or her sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right, and no law shall be passed to restrain or abridge the liberty of speech or of the press. If we had a functioning justice system, this case would have been decided almost immediately in any court within the state of New York. The hate speech law's sole purpose is to restrain and abridge the liberty of both speech and press, since it expects online platforms to suppress both the spoken and written word. For that matter, if we had functioning constitutional governments, such legislation would never have seen the light of day. New York cannot regulate disfavored online speech by compelling online services to mouth support for views they find objectionable, in hopes of deterring or eliminating hate speech. Plaintiffs bring this lawsuit to vindicate their constitutional and statutory rights because the First Amendment does not tolerate efforts like those of the state of New York to cleanse public debate. Because we don't have a functioning judicial system, neither do we have functional constitutional governments. Therefore, we must bow the knee and wait for the priests in black robes to offer their opinion, which most of the people will follow as if it were law. We can only hope the courts get it right this time. Since the 1960s, governments at all levels have been attempting to suppress ideas they find objectionable. Today, the thought of a racially segregated restaurant is abhorrent to all but a tiny number of Americans. That is, it was until colleges and universities started offering segregated housing, activities, and even graduations. So the problem with the suppression of thought is, as Mr. Franklin pointed out, the lack of wisdom. Metaphorically sweeping aside ideas you don't like is the equivalent to ignoring a bad tooth. You may not see it, but it's still there. The longer you ignore it, the greater the decay grows, the more pain it causes, while giving it an increased opportunity for infection to spread. Better to bring these ideas out into the sunlight, have an open debate about them, and show just how bad they are. In other words, the answer to hate speech is not less speech, but more. And as we are seeing, not only in the education system, but in corporate America, pretending bad ideas aren't there gives these cancers an opportunity to metastasize in our society. New York State is certainly not the first government to suppress ideas they do not like. I would have thought the last 3 years of COVID censorship would have shown just how dangerous these thought police are. Now that the evidence is out that government health officials were wrong, that ivermectin is an effective treatment for COVID-19 if used early, that the vaccines do not keep you from getting infected or spreading the virus, that locking down entire communities when the people at serious risk were limited to a small demographic was destructive not only to our economy, but to the education of the next generation. All of this information, including the evidence to back it up, was suppressed by government actors and their allies. How many people died because of lack of treatment? Or even worse, how many died from the treatments used while the information about their dangers was also suppressed? How many family members died alone because government officials made decisions without all the available information? What will be the future impact of the suppression of the dangers of these vaccines that are not legally vaccines and were not properly tested for safety or efficacy while people were illegally coerced into using them? We may never know the true cost of the suppression of public liberty. Now, many people claim that freedom of speech is not absolute, and in a way, they are correct. Look again at Article 1, Section 8 of the New York State Constitution. Every citizen may freely speak, write, and publish on his or her sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right. And no law shall be passed to restrain or abridge the liberty of speech or of the press. You are free to speak, write, or publish all you want, but you are responsible for the abuse of that right. This is where we get the oft-misquoted fire in a crowded theater opinion. The Supreme Court never said the First Amendment prohibited shouting fire in a crowded theater, only that it was not a defense for falsely doing so. Same holds true for perjury. You cannot claim freedom of speech as a defense for lying under oath. So what are the limits of freedom of speech? Well, let's look at the rest of the quote from Mr. Franklin. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check it ought to suffer and the only bounds it ought to know. Like any other right, the only limits we should put on freedom of speech is that it not be used to hurt or control another. This is the logic behind slander, defamation, and perjury laws. They actually hurt another. I'm sure someone will say, but Paul, hate speech hurts other people. Does it really? Yes, it may hurt your feelings, but are you truly harmed by it? So when I was a child, we had a saying about that. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Calling someone an evil name may be unpleasant, but it doesn't stop you from getting a job or living your life. Using your freedom of speech to encourage others to suppress that freedom for others does control them and should not be allowed. To quote Noah Webster in his 1828 dictionary, civil liberty is the liberty of men in a state of society or natural liberty so far only abridged and restrained as is necessary and expedient for the safety and interests of the society, state, or nation. In other words, liberty is a state where you live your life as you see fit without unnecessary external influence. If we all lived our lives at liberty, allowing others the liberty to do the same, well, then things would be messy. But the infections would be brought to the light and could be dealt with. However, liberty is the exact opposite of what the state of New York is doing with this online hate speech law. As Mr. Webster continued in his definition of civil liberty, a restraint of natural liberty not necessary or expedient for the public is tyranny or oppression. You may think the forceful suppression of hate speech is necessary for the public. I beg to differ, and I believe history shows me to be correct. Have you thought about what would happen should your views be deemed hate speech one day? To paraphrase Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew, he who lives by tyranny shall die by oppression. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why we should fight so hard against these rules, these laws, these impositions that suppress free speech. It does harm others. It prevents people from seeing alternate viewpoints that may or may not be correct or may not influence their opinion, may even open them up to a possible third idea. We don't get that when our speech is controlled, which is why it's so important not only to protect your freedom of speech, but the freedom of speech of your neighbor, of your opponent. I remember when the ACLU defended the Ku Klux Klan's ability, their right to parade and demonstrate. I think it was in Muskogee, Wisconsin. Right? They recognized that even though what the Ku Klux Klan stood for was evil, they not only had a right to be seen and heard, it was important to the society that we see and hear just what this evil is, because that's how people decide, I don't want anything to do with it. So the suppression of freedom of speech doesn't simply harm you as the speaker. It harms all of us. because they're not allowed to see or hear or be exposed to other concepts, other information, other ideas. Now, while censorship we often think about on the internet, there are plenty of other ways for people to be censored or otherwise harassed for what they say. But I have to take a break. Before I go, though, please head to the website constitutionstudy.com. That's where I post these articles, the videos. You can ask a question there. Click Ask a Question. There's a checkbox that says, please answer it on the radio. I'll be more than happy to. You can donate to the cause, help support the radio program, the articles, the videos, the events that I go to. It takes a lot of time, effort, and money. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Maybe consider signing up for one of the mailing lists, get my monthly newsletter or my weekly insider update, or just have my articles and videos emailed to you when they are published. It's all available right there on the website, constitutionstudy.com. Now, also, are you tired of feeling tired? My wife has had a problem as long as I've known her. She doesn't sleep very well quite frequently. When that happens, she reaches for a REM sleep from Healthy Cell. It helps her fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply so she can wake up refreshed and ready to hit the day. In fact, REM sleep is the only supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 25% off your first order. So go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Once again, go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together with any of their great products. I love many of the products from Healthy Cell. But make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you'll get 25% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
All right. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about how do we defend freedom of speech. I read an article that I wrote about the freedom of speech and why it's so important in the first segment. And I told you I want to look at some ways that freedom of speech and other freedoms may be infringed. And some of you may be surprised by the first article I'm looking at. See, the House has created a panel a subcommittee to look into the weaponization of the federal government. Now, I'm going to be very clear. I'm trying to be consistent here. I berated the January 6th committee for being a kangaroo court. What would make this committee any different? Well, so far, based on what I found, Not really very much. But those differences are important. So while I'm not entirely trusting of this new commission, I will give them a chance. So what are some of the differences? Well, here's what I'm looking at. I brought up the text of H.R. 3233, the National Commission to Investigate the January 6th Attack on the United States Capitol Complex Act. Now, I'm going to compare that to House Resolution 12, establishing a select subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government as a select investigative subcommittee of the Committee on the Judiciary. Don't you just love some of these titles? So looking at the purposes of the National Commission on Investigation of the January 6th Committee, the purpose was to investigate and report upon the facts and causes related to the January 6, 2021 domestic terrorist attack on the United States Capitol Complex. I've already talked about that's not the role of Congress. Congress doesn't have general investigatory responsibility. They want to examine and evaluate evidence developed by state, federal, and local government agencies in a matter that is respectful for ongoing law enforcement. They want to build upon the investigation of other entities to avoid unnecessary duplication, and to investigate and report to the President and Congress on its findings, conclusions, and recommendations for corrective measures that may include law, policy, procedure, rules, regulations. Okay, so here you have what I can only describe as a fig leaf. Remember, Congress does not have general investigatory powers. The only reason Congress can investigate is to create new law, or I should say to change law, in other words, pass legislation, or in relation to articles of impeachment, which were never provided here. So this idea, well, one of the things they may do is changes in laws or policies and procedures, except look at what they're doing. They aren't investigating government actors. They're investigating things in general. Now, compare that to the purpose defined in House Resolution 12, the subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government. So under its investigative functions and authority, it says that the select subcommittee is authorized and directed to conduct a full and complete investigation and study and, no later than January 2nd, 2025, issue a final report to the House of its findings regarding the expansive role of Article II authority vested in the executive branch to collect information on and otherwise investigate citizens of the United States, including ongoing criminal investigations. How executive branch agencies work with, obtain information from, and provide information to the private sector, nonprofit entities, or other government agencies to facilitate actions against the American citizens, including the extent, if any, to which illegal or improper, unconstitutional, or unethical activities were engaged in by the executive branch or private sector of the United against citizens of the United States. How executive branch agencies collect, compile, analyze, use, or disseminate information about citizens of the United States. The laws, programs, and activities of the executive branch as they relate to the collection of information on citizens of the United States. And any other issues related to the violation of the civil liberties of the United States and any manner relating to information collected pursuant to investigations conducted under this paragraph. Okay, so a lot of words. Let me break this down a little bit. The January 6th committee was about the attack on the Capitol. It was a kind of a broad sweeping way on all this information about an alleged crime committed on the Capitol. That is not the role of Congress. That's the role of the executive. Now, the weaponization of the federal government is different. It is focused on the executive branch. It says, is the executive branch abusing its authority? I mean, what is the role of the executive branch to collect information, to investigate citizens, to obtain information, and to use sometimes private entities to do so? So I'm looking at this going, okay, that sounds better. Am I convinced what they're doing is constitutional? Not quite yet. And we probably won't know until this committee actually starts investigating and actually starts developing its report. See, the question is the committee looking for laws that need to be written or modified or possible articles of impeachment? If that is their focus, If that's what they're looking at, then okay, I'll give them the authority. They are overseeing how money that is being spent by the federal government is being used in these functions. How the executive branch is being focused. So this is not Congress investigating a law. This is Congress investigating another branch of government. The question is, which is not obvious from the legislation, is it to enact political punishment? Is it to develop to help the Congress develop legislation? Is it to help find evidence for articles of impeachment? If that's the case, then I would say this subcommittee is constitutional. However, I'm reserving judgment. Why? Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. These are politicians. And how this committee runs will have a big impact in how I view it as to whether or not it is constitutional. I believe this is a little better than the January 6th. And again, it's not a political issue because they are not investigating here. This subcommittee is not attempting to investigate a crime. It is investigating the actions of another branch of government. And since most of the powers delegated to the United States are delegated to Congress, if Congress is going to have any balancing power against the executive, they've got to have a way of doing it. So I'm not real sanguine about this. I'm not really convinced. I'm not going to tell you that, oh yeah, this one's fine and the other one was bad. The other one was evil. This one, maybe a little better. A lot's going to have to depend on how the committee actually goes about the duty that it was given by the House of Representatives. Because, again, if the goal is to see if there are grounds for impeachment, well, impeachment is a function of Congress, right? Article 2, Section 4 says the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And Congress has, or I should say the House, has the sole power of impeachment. So only the House of Representatives can actually impeach anyone, right? So is there evidence? Are there facts? And that's why I said let's take a look at some of the things that might actually generate, say, an article of impeachment for, well, it's not treason. It may be considered bribery. It certainly seems to be a high crime and definitely a misdemeanor, which, by the way, in Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary, a misdemeanor is a bad behavior. It's not criminal behavior, it's bad behavior. So take, for example, the attorneys general for Missouri and Louisiana have sued, about the relationship between Facebook and the Biden White House. And in part of that discovery, there's an email dated April 14th let's just say that Rob Flattery, who I believe was a social media head at the time, well, kind of berates Facebook for not taking down a post from Tucker Carlson's show about issues with the COVID shot. Reading from the email, it said, talking about the video, not violative. The second half of the segment is raising conspiracy theories about the government hiding that all vaccines aren't effective. It's not about just J&J. What exactly is the rule for removal versus demoting? Moreover, you say reduced or demoted. What does that mean? There's 40,000 shares on the video. Who is seeing it now? How many? How effective is that? And we've gone a million rounds on this in other contexts. So pardon what may seem like deja vu. But on what basis is visit the COVID-19 Information Center for Vaccine Resources the best thing to tag to a video that says the vaccine doesn't work? Not for nothing, but last time we did this dance, it ended in an insurrection. Now, here you have someone, and again, this is from a White House account, right? It's from, I think it's, the Executive Office of the President, EOP.gov. Seems to me that is an executive agent pressing, coercing a private entity to demote content they don't like. Now, that certainly is bad behavior. And if they're attempting to both control another company's platform and to deprive people of their freedom of the press, well, see, that's a violation not only of the Constitution, but of federal law. Title 18, United States Code, Section 242. It's a crime to do that under color of law, rule, regulation, or custom. So we do seem to have what appears to be an impeachable offense. Now, I find it interesting because remember, we've had the Twitter files being released where we saw Mr. Flaherty and others in the both Biden and Trump White Houses trying to influence content on a third-party platform, Twitter and Facebook. And I'm asking, is that not a suppression of, is that not an infringement of freedom of the speech? Or more accurately, freedom of the press, since these are, well, a combination of both, right? Because when if it's a video of Tucker Carlson, that's freedom of speech. If it's an article or a text post, that's freedom of the press. The First Amendment's quite clear. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So if Congress created an office or allows an office to deal with this in the executive branch, they're following those laws. And therefore, they don't have the power to abridge a person's freedom of speech or freedom of the press. And in fact, again, under Title 18, that means it's also a crime to deprive someone of a right protected by the constitutional laws of the United States based on under color of law, rule, regulation, or custom. And just so we're clear, to abridge means to lessen, to diminish, to deprive, to cut off from. But also consider this. See, Facebook and Twitter, they own their platforms. They've invested the money into buying the hardware, into developing the software. They own them. So if an actor of the federal government claims that they have the authority to demand that a platform do what they want, that a private entity takes their property and use it the way the federal government wants, well, that's a deprivation of property without due process, a violation of the Fifth Amendment. Now, I don't think we quite get there, right? Because they aren't forcing it, they're pressuring it. But they're tacking pretty close to that deprivation of property under without due process. So here we have what appear to be evidence of abridgment of freedom of speech, denying people freedom of speech, freedom of press. What do we do? Well, I think there's several things we can start with. Start by, if you live in Missouri or Louisiana, are you supporting your attorneys general? And think about it. These people have put their reputation on the line and said, we are going to sue. Will you support them for that? Especially if they're going to be attacked by, let's say, their political opposition. How about the rest of us? What are we doing? Are we pressuring our attorneys general, the attorney generals of our states, to do something, to step up, to look at the condition of or what is being done in the federal executive and start getting the judiciary engaged? How about the states themselves passing laws that would push back on the federal government's infringement on the rights of their citizens? They have that power. Now, again, I'm not 100% sure. I'm reserving judgment on the House subcommittee because it can go well or it could go poorly. So I'm not against the committee at this point, but I certainly would be reaching out to members of your member of the House of Representatives, especially if they get appointed to this subcommittee, to make sure that they are focusing on a constitutionally sound argument, that they are investigating the executive branch for potential legislative restrictions or impeachment. Let's not turn this into another political witch hunt that it could so easily happen. And then we also ought to consider, well, who we're doing business with, who we're going to support that way. Now, sometimes I'm asked why I don't set up another account on Facebook. For those of you who may not know, I got kicked off of Facebook a couple years ago, just before the 2020 elections. They didn't tell me specifically why, but at the time I was talking a lot about how the presidential election, how we actually elect a president of the United States. They banned me. I mean, when they say they banned me, first they gave me a 30-day suspension. Then just as that suspension was coming up, they canceled, they locked out my account. And when I tried to set up another account on a different email, even before I got, you know, you fill out the form and it says, here, we're going to send you a confirmation email. Even before I got that email, they locked out my account. The only way I could possibly create an account is to use a different IP address. But I said, why? Facebook is not interested in the truth. They're not interested in my content. I'm not interested in Facebook. Not saying there haven't been consequences, right? There's several groups I deal with. They are primarily on Facebook. Some are only on Facebook. Can't interact with them. Can't work with them. Why? Because I can't have an account on Facebook. On the other hand, while I was considering dropping my account on Twitter, now that Elon Musk is in charge, I'm giving it a second thought. I'm not sure if I'm going to. So far, Twitter hasn't given me a hard time. They haven't blocked any of my content, and we're seeing more people allowed back on Twitter. So we should consider, what are we willing to give up in order to support our freedom of speech? Now, I've got some actors other than the federal government, but before I do, I have to take a break. And I want to remind you that I'm just one of several voices on America Out Loud. Please stop by America Out Loud daily to get the latest news and happenings. Then take the content there, the articles, the videos, the stories, the podcasts, share them far, share them wide, so we can all work together to help secure the blessings of liberty.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutloud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan, a plan based on real science that responds to the real world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure, a plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. If you join the Constitution study, we're talking about defending freedom of speech. I talked about how important it is in the first segment. In the second segment, I looked at, well, ways that government actors are looking to, quote unquote, defend freedom of speech and some of the dangers that may be associated with it and what we the people can actually do. But there's other examples, and it kind of highlights how important it is that we the people pay attention to certain things, especially where we're getting our information, the old trust but verify. How do we vet the information that we're getting? Well, for example, there's a group, I believe it's called Advanced Democracy, that is going through a lot of Elon Musk's Twitter posts and stuff, looking for, quote, climate change misinformation. Right? In other words, they're scanning Twitter, looking for what they refer to as climate change misinformation. There's something very interesting. See, this is the same group that funded the Fusion GPS private investigation into what became known as the Steele dossier, which turned out to be just Democratic opposition research. It was a scam. It was a hoax. So do you trust what these people are pushing now? I mean, this group is claiming that climate fraud and climate hoax scam and scams have increased 300% in 2022. Okay, but if pointing out the problems with the climate change rhetoric, pointing out that, well, they've been wrong for 50 years, why should we believe they're right now? That claims that we were doomed every 10 years have not come true? That the agenda they're pushing doesn't make sense. It doesn't work out. There are not enough batteries. You can't replace a power source like fossil fuels that has a continuing source of power with intermittent power and not have serious changes. Or is it just, again, another scam, another hoax meant to scare people into taking action that they want? See, the thing about free speech is they have a right to claim that people who are attacking the climate change agenda are providing misinformation. Doesn't mean you have to listen to it. Doesn't mean you have to follow it. But they have the right to say so. But it's our responsibility to not simply take what they're saying face value. Where's the evidence? Where's the proof? And when you refer to something as a hoax, is it a hoax because you say it's a hoax, or is it a hoax because you have evidence it's a hoax? In other words, in a free society, you have a responsibility to vet the information before you act on it. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you don't vet the information for yourself, well, you're pretty much going to be dependent on someone else to vet that information for you, aren't you? Well, take California. Now, if there is an example of the Orwellian dystopia we are heading for, it's got to be California. See, they've passed a new law that will charge physicians and surgeons with unprofessional conduct if they spread information that the California Medical Board believes is misinformation. You remember all those facts that turned out to be true, like the origin of COVID-19, the dangers and ineffectiveness of the mRNA vaccines, the rise in adverse effects, the fact that COVID-19 really is only dangerous to a small demographic, that masks don't work. Yeah, all of that, if you are a doctor in California, can have your license revoked as misinformation. Now, why is this important? Well, let's take a little hypothetical trip. Let's imagine you're in California and you listen to all the news you're allowed to hear. No, not all the news that's fit to print, not all the news that's out, all the news you're allowed to hear. See, the California says you're not allowed to be told that masks don't work. So you wear a mask and you think, well, I'll be fine. I don't have to worry about anything else. So you walk in and let's say you get COVID. And let's say for some reason you get a real serious bout of COVID. Granted, it's pretty rare unless you have underlying medical conditions, but let's follow this little hypothetical track. So you start looking for how do we treat COVID? And of course, you have to follow what the California Medical Board says, meaning you don't get told, hey, you know what, if you take ivermectin early along with zinc, it really helps. Things like high-dose vitamin C also helps. So you're not allowed to tell that. The only thing you're allowed to be told is, oh, well, try the Paxlovid. Or as the doctors originally said, go home until you're really, really sick and have to be put on a ventilator, then come back and we'll treat you. How well do you live then? And then when you said, okay, wow, I survived that. I'll get the COVID jab, right? It's a vaccine. It's going to stop me from getting sick. So you get the jab and you think, wow, I'm all set. Except now you're getting all the booster shots. And all of a sudden you're having issues. You're one of the still relatively small percentage of people, but large in scope, that are getting, you know, problems. Maybe it's a heart problem. Maybe you're a woman that's having reproductive issues. Maybe you're just getting, you know, all the list of adverse effects. Maybe you're just an athlete that, you know, drops down of a heart attack on the field. Because you weren't allowed to be told that these are dangers, that there are certain things you should consider before taking the shot. You weren't allowed to be told that. Now, that's not simply a dystopian novel like 1984. That's a dystopian future we are heading for. See, California is claiming the authority to determine what is and isn't true for you. And before you say, well, at least I don't live in California, they're just first in line. There are more states that are, if not around COVID, around other things. They're saying, we get to define what misinformation is. And don't forget, D.C. tried the same thing, right? They've been trying to suppress information they find inconvenient. The White House has done it. The different media organizations have done it. See, the thing about freedom of speech is it's messy. People are allowed to think things you don't like. People are allowed to say things you don't like. And if you're going to be free, you have to let them. But it also comes with responsibility of, I have to wade through this information. I have to ask for the proof of what you're saying is true. And I have to admit, a lot of things that people tell me when I ask for the proof, well, it's pretty thin and frequently not existent. Now, the interesting thing is, many of these same people would look back at maybe the treatment of Galileo or others that challenged the status quo and say, isn't it terrible that those in power suppressed information because we wouldn't have learned about the orbits of the planets and all that if we'd allow them to continue suppression? How terrible the way they treated Galileo and others that challenged the status quo while they're sitting there and punishing others that are challenging the status quo. Brings me all the way back to the quote from Benjamin Franklin as Silas Dugan in 1722. See, without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom. Unless we're allowed to think different ideas, express those ideas, share them, challenge them, have them challenged, then we will not have wisdom. And you cannot live free without wisdom. As Franklin went on, he said, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. We claim to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. But we're only free if we have freedom of speech. If you are not allowed to express yourself in a private or a professional area, then we don't have liberty. The Statue of Liberty becomes a mockery. It mocks us because we gave up our liberty when we allowed others to decide for us. See, I look through the past and I'm trying to figure out how did we get here? How did we get to the point from when I was younger and I recognized, you know, I may vehemently disagree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. To the idea of, listen, if you don't toe the party line, you get shut up. You lose your license. And the funny thing is, I think I'm finding an answer. But I don't think you're going to like it. Because it's when we the people stop taking care of ourselves and ask government to do it for us. No, I'm not talking about welfare or Medicare or Social Security. I'm talking about when we said, no, government, you decide whether or not the doctor's any good. You decide whether or not the medicine should be available to the public. You decide what foods and how they should be prepared and even how we build our homes and live our lives and what goes in our vehicles and in our toilets and in our light bulbs. When we turned over to government the power to decide for us, we lost the ability to think free. Now, I'm sure there are people out there going, but Paul, they took it from us. They stole it from us. We let it happen. We let it happen. And we have a piece at a time. You know, we'll take over the Department of Education. We will educate your children. We will tell you what isn't fact. We will teach them how we want them to live. And now we have more evidence that it's not simply that they're educating them. They're literally educating them to think their parents are stupid and need to be ignored. We turned over the medical profession. What happened to the country doctor, the neighborhood doctor? And if they were a good doctor, people went to them. And if they were a bad doctor, word got out and people stopped going to them. We decided, no, government needs to make that decision for us. Sure, there were bad doctors. They're bad doctors today. The only difference is now we have government deciding whether or not they will be able to practice. And they don't do it so much based on the quality of their practice, but on their ability to follow the government mandates. By the way, the same goes, as I said, for our cars, for our homes, and for pretty much every aspect of our life. See, we lost our public liberty because we gave up our free speech, when we gave up our freedom of thought and said, someone else think for me. Someone else decide what foods I should eat. Remember the food pyramid? Someone else decide whether or not this product should be allowed or not. Someone else decide how to keep me safe. Someone else decide what medical treatments they are. We gave up our own thought. I want to stress that again. We gave up our freedom to think when we turned over to government the ability to think for us. And every time they took a little bit more, we simply sat back and let it happen. See, that's the part that most people seem to forget. It's not simply that, well, they passed a legislation creating the Department of Education. We let it happen. It was the representatives of the people and of the states that created such legislation. It was the representatives of the citizens of California that hired legislators that came up with this law. They worked for us, but we forgot that too. We forgot that because we turned over our education system and that have taught our children to simply do what the government employee tells you to. We've been told you can't fight City Hall. Yes, you can. It's just not easy. So what can we do? Well, if you're in California, how about you start firing your legislators that pass such legislation? How about you start protecting the doctors who are giving you accurate information, evidence-based information, that if the government says, well, we're going to lose your license, go to them anyway. Where does it say that you need the government to tell you whether or not a doctor is okay? You need a bureaucrat to approve a doctor. From my experience, the bureaucratic doctors are the ones that are most dangerous. Do you know how hard it is for us to find, where I live, a doctor that isn't more bureaucrat than medical professional? But it's worth it, because I want a doctor that I can talk to and that will give me evidence for their recommendations, not simply, well, the FDA said this is the proper treatment. Now, I'm not saying we're going to fix the world. Not even trying to hint that we might fix the world. But think about it. If wisdom comes from freedom of thought, or I should say, if you can't have wisdom without freedom of thought, then the answer starts in our own minds, where we think. See, that's the thing that tyrants cannot get rid of, is what is between your ears. They will try to suppress the information. They'll try to keep you from getting the information. They may punish you for actually searching for that information. But once you have that information, you become free in your own mind. You have freedom of thought. And that freedom of thought can allow us to have wisdom. And that wisdom will tell us that if we want liberty, we have to allow freedom of speech, which means I have to allow someone else to say something I find wrong or offensive or misinformation. Sure, they should be punished for actual lies, for libel or slander or perjury. There need to be punishments for those. But until we think freely, I don't think we'll be able to allow others to speak freely. And we can't be the land of the free if we aren't brave enough to at least start with freedom of thought. Just think, if you've been listening to this program for a while, you've been exposed to ideas, to thoughts you may have never heard of. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said that one of the things I liked about my articles and my videos is that I try to wrap things up in a way people can understand so that you can be exposed, not just to the background of my thoughts, the evidence I give for my thoughts, but what I'm trying to say, so that you maybe can be exposed to something else. Now, you may agree with me, you may disagree with me, but at least you've been exposed to other ideas. And the freedom of thought is what brings wisdom. That is what we're going to need if we're going to return to being the land of the free. We have to be brave enough to think for ourselves. Now, if you like what you hear, please spread the word. Let other people know. Every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they can hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. All of my shows, episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio, so you can find them on your favorite podcast apps. Now, you can find the links on the homepage at AmericaOutloud.com. But do me a favor. Let's take this idea of freedom of thought and let's spread it. We do that not simply by exercising our freedom of speech, but exercising in a way that encourages others. So take those links, share them. Friends, family, social media, wherever you can. By sharing them, you're actually sharing the blessings of liberty to others. And can you think of a better thing to do than to expand public liberty by exercising your freedom of speech?